Welcome again. Good morning. And today we are in our sixth morning gatherings. And these days, as you already know, we have been taking some time to explore somehow the core of our Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, theology, through some of the important verses, at least in my consideration, hopefully yours as well, that somehow shed light on different principles, like what's bhakti, description, definition, sadhu sangha, beginning, middle, and end. What else we talked about? You remind me now.
Disciple.
Guru disciple relationship, context of sadhu sangha bhakti. And yesterday, nope. Which I again we tried to make the point that it was a very important point throughout scripture all over, right? God is omnipresent and therefore everything is omnilovable. Right? The omni-loving is omnipresent, therefore everything is being omni-loved. That's basically the point. And if we are missing all of that party, it's because we are omni-absent. Right? So we feel omni-unloving, omni-unlovable, that's omni-absence. That's it. So it's all about gaining presence to the miracle of what's already taking place. Adjusting our sight, our view, no? And when our tradition speaks a lot about becoming a seer of truth, learning to see, in one way is learn, in one way is learning to be present to what is and see it, basically, no? So yeah, we have explored all that. So far, we have concentrated more, so to say, on our side, in some degree, on us practicing bhakti, on us connecting with sadhus in connection to guru as disciple, in perceiving God's presence, in learning to relate to anything and everyone in a proper way. And today and tomorrow, which is our last two morning explorations, because on Sunday morning we have like circle, farewell circle sharing. I like to concentrate on how the sweet absolute responds to us when we embrace all that we've described so far. When we embrace bhakti, when we immerse in sadhu sangha, when we become students, when we embody the teaching, when we relate to others, acknowledging God's presence everywhere, how does, in other words, how does God respond to bhakti? Which is a big, big topic. Again, we are just seeing two verses today and tomorrow, but it's eternity is waiting for us to be, for us to explore this now. And this is a very beautiful, charming Gaudiya Vaishnava feature, no? To which point God becomes affected by love, basically, and what makes of him, what makes that of him, how he becomes who he is, ultimately, all that he is. So again, we have already spoken how bhakti changes the way we perceive God, no? How we can get rid of toxic perceptions, projections of the divine. And I'm pointing like this because sometimes we throw him quite far away. We have spoken how bhakti can change the way we perceive others, again, relating to everyone with God present there. So today we turn the movement around. And we're asking what happens within God when our love reaches him. Because we already talked many times, God loves everything and everyone unconditionally, but what happens when we return the embrace? No, it's not that he said, "Oh, I was already loving you, so now I was just waiting for your embrace, and that's it. Now we are equal. Game over." That's the beginning of the game, actually. That's the actual official beginning. Okay, now we have both teams participating, so to say. It's one team. So what happens within God when bhakti reaches him, when our love reaches him, how he becomes affected by that? Again, there are many, many verses in Shastra about that. I always have big difficulty and anxiety having to pick one. That's in blessed anxiety. No? Someone says, okay, what's your favorite place of pilgrimage in Vrindavan or now? Don't put me in anxiety. There are many verses. So we have touched upon that throughout the conversations these days and how the Sweet Absolute becomes captured, conquered, crafted, indebted, by love. Is again very confidential knowledge. By the love he received from his devotees, he becomes all of those things. Indebted, captured, crafter, conquer. You know, we can make a good long list of attributes, to the point of him being humbled, him, God, being humbled to the extreme, to the point of tears feeling, I'm not giving enough. Myself, I'm not reciprocating enough. No, I'm eternally indebted. I can never reciprocate accordingly, and I happen to be God. So if I cannot do what to do? These divine dilemmas, these divine paradox, which show us the intimacy of God's inner life and God's inner existential dilemma. What to do? I'm in trouble, right? Blessed travel, good travel, as they will say in English, no? Good travel. God likes to get into good travel. So there are many. Again, it's very beautiful how this principle unfolds in Shastra. I'm warming up for the verse. I'm going there. I'm not forgetting we have a verse waiting here. But as you know, for example, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita 4:11, he says, Yatamam, according to how you approach me, I reciprocate accordingly. So that sounds more like, okay, proportional stuff, no? Which is never proportional because again, he loves us unconditionally even before we know about, even when we deny his existence. But he's humble, so he's not showing off, hey, I'm loving you even before. It's not your approach, I will reciprocate in kind. In other words, you love me in a certain way, I adjust to your approach to me. And then we have other verses, we will see a few later. The Krishna says even he adopts specific forms to reciprocate to the love of his devotees. So that previous verse of the Gita adopts a more specific form. Not only I reciprocate accordingly to your love, I take a particular, unique, irrepeatable form to reciprocate to your unique, irrepeatable love. Radically personal. And then we have this idea, which again we realize now this was not proportional. Krishna is always showing disproportionate love, like we were exploring some days ago. This verse from the bottom when Uddhava is saying, "Ho bhakyam sthana kala putam," like Krishna is giving this love to Putana. Putana is approaching him with murderous intentions, and he's giving her the position of a mother. And again, there was some previous reason, but still the reason is unreasonable. It doesn't match what so. We get these statements then. Like, actually, whatever he's giving, even if you're approaching one way or another, is utter disproportionate from his side to ours. And then you push step further, and again, we have Brahma then saying, oh, you gave so much disproportionate love to Putana, who want to kill you. How will you reciprocate to the Vrajavasis, who love you so madly? And now Krishna is. Now the perspective turned the other way around, like, oh, their love for me is disproportionate because they only love me extremely, and I have so many devotees and I love all of them, but I'm like kind of divided in so many directions, but they have one pointedness to me. Their love for me is disproportionate. So now he's asking that question. Well, he's no longer, I'm loving everyone disproportionately. He's saying, I'm being loved disproportionately. And then we get to the Bhagavatam and to the peak of the Rasa Lila. Krishna saying when he reappears after he disappeared from Rasa Lila after the Gopis sang Gopi Gita, he said, "Napari ham niravatya." See, I cannot repay back your love. Oh, remember the first verse I quoted in this sequence was Krishna Gita saying, "According to how you approach, I reciprocate." After all, a few things happen in between. Krishna saying, "I cannot reciprocate. I'm indebted eternally." And that's somehow the beginning of Gaur Lila. That's another portal, a beautiful one. But in that verse of the Bhagavatam, proper reciprocation is cancelled. And rather than thinking of God is loving us disproportionately, which is true. At the same time, he's subjectively, personally feeling is disproportionate in the other direction. They are loving me disproportionate to such a degree that not only I cannot repay, but I do not even know how much is the debt. Because I can know, okay, it's $5 million, I will never pay back. It's so much that I can, the calculator machine explodes when I try to make the say put the number. It's like there's no number for that. Infinity. So I cannot reciprocate. And then we have all these verses that start to poetically describe an indebted God, a conquered God, but and say the one who is a Jita, unconquerable, becomes Jita, conquered. And starts to bring all this like contrast. The one who is never captured becomes tied by Yashoda's love and brings all these ideas, right? The one who is the supremely independent, first verse of the Bhagavatam, Swarat, Ambhaktaparad, he Ashra Tantra. I'm not independent, Krishna said. I'm totally under control of my. So all these multiple contradictions that are perfectly reconciled in love and in God. Or God himself again saying, try, I'm trying. I know I'm eternally indebted and I'm trying to give myself and I'm trying to give him. Still, I feel I'm not giving enough. One verse of Brihadbhagavatamrita, not this one that we'll be seeing today. There's this phrase, Swadhana Atriptam, which means after Krishna's swa gives his own being dhana in charity to his devotees, Atriptam. He feels dissatisfied, feeling I'm not giving enough. No, still not enough. And then we have this verse from the Bhagavatam that we shared the other day. I know that Krishna said, Anubrajami. I follow into the footsteps of my devotees and I try to get their foot dust, hoping to be purified from the fault of not being able to reciprocate accordingly. I perpetually, Nityam Pujaji, Anubrajami Nityam. Perpetually, I am following after the foot dust of my devotees so I can be purified from the sin of not being able to repay back their love accordingly. That's his eternal conditions. Right? But there is a clear progression here from I reciprocate accordingly to I perpetually follow after your footsteps to get that dust to be purified from my debt and failure to reciprocate accordingly. Confessing at the end, full reciprocation is impossible. So, in one sense, gradually love exceeds the language of equivalence. And of course, the paradox is that not only God feels like that. It's not like Krishna says that, and they will say, "Yeah, you're right. You're indebted to us." They are feeling exactly the same. So everyone is feeling the same. That's the paradox of love makes everyone a debtor, so to say. It's the highest wealth, and nobody can totally purchase it. Sorry. So everyone becomes a debtor. So all this to we're preparing the ground for this verse, an important one. So these verses that I just described, as you can see, they're not describing a static absolute, like unmovable, unmoved, completely self-satisfied, unchanging anything. Only observing devotion, witnessing thing, you're blessed. That's it. But a deeply, fully relational God that is touched by affection, affected to an extreme degree. No, to an extreme degree. So that's a very, as we talked some days ago, Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam. Remember, we said Bhakti is the king of knowledge and the king of secrets. Because all this stuff is super confidential. We cannot even make that up if we sit by ourselves and, okay, I'll try to make up a cool story about God and something that nobody's, it's beyond imagination. It's transrational. It can only be received by revelation. It's not something we can make up as humans. It's not like a nice human storytelling. So, and of course, each of the verses that I just referred to, all of them could have been included in the series this week. And maybe now you're hating me for not having included them, the ones I just referred to, because all of them are beautiful. We don't have time for that. But somehow we are trying to include them and honor them and put them in the context of what we will be sharing today, which is a unique verse from the Brihadbhagavatamrita of Sanatana Goswami, which is a work which has many beautiful verses. Again, that's a struggle to pick just one. But this one is, I would say, it's my favorite on the Brihadbhagavatamrita. But again, then you may share a few others that will. That also, but this is kind of because of many things it says, as we all say, right? But before going to the verse, just a few words about the book, Brihadbhagavatamrita, which means Brihad means big, Bhagavatam means Bhagavatam, and Amrita means eternal nectar, immortal nectar of the great Bhagavatam. Since we say all the books of the Goswamis are extended chapters of the Bhagavatam. No, they're not different from the Bhagavatam. When someone thinks Srimad Bhagavatam, it's only this book, and then comes the books of the Goswami, we say, no, that's also the Bhagavatam. No, the natural extension. They are extracting all that lies in between the lines of the verses of the official Bhagavatam. The Goswamis are turning that and showing. They have written commentaries on the Bhagavatam. Sanatana Goswami wrote a commentary on the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. But it was not enough. So he had to write Brihadbhagavatam. And then it was not enough, and he wrote a commentary to his own book. Which may sound narcissistic from a wrong perspective. Like, you comment on your own book. I mean, like, you're too full of yourself. But it was more like, okay, there's so much more to say. I already wrote the verse, let's comment on the verse. Generally, we hear people commenting on others' books, commentary to the Bhagavatam by Vishwanath Chakravartiji, commenting on your own book. That's a very interesting feature of this, like, holy dissatisfaction. Something else had to be said. So Brihadbhagavatamrita actually is the first from among the Goswamis' literature, which is there's a lot. This is the first book, they're the first Gaudiya Vaishnava work. In terms of Goswami Granta. So that's kind of somehow sets the tone for what Goswami literature is about. Sanatana Goswami is kind of the elder of the Goswamis. And it's the first one. So it's setting the tone in many ways. As we know, one of them is a beautiful depiction of theological cross-pollination, no? Of Gopakumar traveling and meeting so many varieties of devotees with their own faith. And he's not rejecting anyone, not being on a sectarian tour, canceling everyone, trying to convert everyone, and eventually bore conquering and taking over the world, and everyone became a Sakha, like he had the aspiration of. He met everyone, he got nourished. For some time he stayed. He was like, oh, okay, and eventually continuing to fulfill his longing in Vrindavan as a friend of Krishna. But appreciating all the different religions. Literally, that he finds in his way. So that's first important point that Brihadbhagavatamrita makes. First book of the Goswami, first book in one sense of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. That's what Gaudiya Sampradaya is about, among other things. Well, the main attainment of Gopakumar was Sakya-rasa, which also is an important point in the sense that sometimes Gaudiya Vaishnavas, some become a little racist in the context of rasa. Only Manjari Bhav is the real thing. Only Madhuri Rasa. Everyone else is lower. No, there must be some, may have made some aparat, and that's why they were demoted, and they cannot belong to the higher thing. And for Sanatana Goswami showing someone not going for Manjari Bhav, but going for Sakya Rasa, saying that's a possibility among other possibilities. No, so let's keep our heads and hearts open. So many of these points are very, very open. So anyhow, many interesting points regarding Brihadbhagavatamrita. I don't want to stay there. We'll go to the verse in that we want to explore today, which again speaks about how the sweet absolute feels for his devotees, from a very unique perspective, and in a very unique articulation, in a very unique way of putting it. So the verse says, "Pishyeshato nagarasi karasya." Swaramatadi swagunapavadhai apekshaniya paramapriyasa kashtapada sri bhagavatva simma. Pues Brihad Bhagavatamrita 2:4:228, ¿no? Second canto of second volume, fourth chapter, verse 228. And the translation that we are sharing says, "It is specially remarkable that Sri Krishna, the crown jewel of consummate lovers, may set aside his self-satisfaction and all his other inherent qualities, yet he can never relinquish his disposition to come under the loving control of his dear devotees. Indeed, he graciously welcomes their sway as supremely desirable and dear. This is the highest summit, the ultimate limit of his godhood." There's a lot there. So fourth lines, everything's there. One sentence in each one of the verses we study stays. We just pick one of them and go deeper, everything is there. You can just pick one and sit with that for eternity. And well, that's the generosity of grace. We don't need to have to learn all the shlokas and have to do everything. You just take one and go deeper into that one direction, and everything's there. Rather than trying to take everything on a superficial level, focus one direction. So anyhow, the context for this verse, the previous verses to this one, are explaining how Bhagavan is under get becomes controlled by love, and tries to prove how that's not a defect. Because again, from an ordinary perspective, you can think God comes under the control of someone else. Ooh, that's strange, right? And to the normal logic, that doesn't make sense. No, God is a supreme controller. Nobody can come under his control. Everyone is controlled by him. So we have Bhagavatamrita is gradually building a case like, no, that God becomes controller, it's not a fault. Not only it's not a fault, of course, it's an ornament. It's his highest, glorious. This verse now is concluding. It's the ultimate symptom that God is God. Again, Raja Guhyam, very confidential knowledge. For the ordinary, quote unquote, ordinary knowledge of God is never controlled. God is never affected. God is never transformed by love. God is impassible. Not impossible. Impassible means he's untouched, unmoved. And there are many theologians in various traditions who would think like that. God is the unmoved mover. He's the one who sets in motion creation, but he's unmoved, impassible, which for us we'll say impassible is impossible because of how much love he's been impacted by. And of course, I talked about that in evolution in divine love. There is an unchanging part of the divine, but there is a part that is always experiencing new degrees of loving experience. So this very confidential knowledge, again, what is that thing that makes God a plaything in the hands of his lovers? That's very secret knowledge. So this verse, as well as many of the ones we shared before, this verse reverses again many ideas about God. And even if we are officially Gaudiya Vaishnavas, unconsciously we may still be carrying some religious cultural inheritance about God being above the sky, far away, chastiser, angry, watching over, surveillance, agency, hell, who knows? Testing you. Well, like the other day, I was watching this podcast with Hari Parshad Navrasa, and I appreciate the point he made that Navrasa brought something about Krishna's testing us. Say, like, I'm not worshiping a testing God. And I've read Shastra, he's well read in Shastra, there's nowhere that says Krishna's testing you. So again, this type of thing that everyone takes for granted, but where is that coming from? Oh, I heard it from Bhakta, whatever, on a Sunday feast. Or on the corridor, go waiting for the shower. Right? That's how it became canon. Huh? Krishna's testing you. Right. Where is canon? We have to also, I mean, we have to be rigorous in, okay, where's that coming from? Because if not, we can make our own sampradaya in the corridor waiting for the shower, right? Like, Krishna's testing you. is watching over. Again, so this verse tries to reverse a main big part of our sharing these days and always is trying to deconstruct false belief and dissolve toxic ideas about everything. That those are many times the things that get in the way of our actual progress and our actual experience, not even so much wrong. Of course, we may have things that we need to work on, but many of the main things that get in the way are wrong ideas we have about things. Wrong sambandha, wrong orientation to who is Krishna, what is bhakti, who we are, what's this world. And many times that's what prevents from a genuine, touching, transformative experience in love. So that's why we spend so much time pounding the post of deconstruction. Not deconstruction to the point that nothing remains. The construction of the false belief, and while doing so, hopefully reinserting proper values and perspectives. So again, this verse, among many, reverses many common ideas we may have about God, which again, we usually imagine the divine being unaffected, beyond, untouched, utterly transcendent, indifferent, probably. And here he's presenting a God, Sanatana Goswami is presenting a God that, oh, Krishna has the capacity to be affected by love. And that makes him more capable, not less, more sensitive, not less. And he will say, not only that, but the fact that he can be affected by love, that's the highest evidence for his godhood. Will go there in a minute, but that's what the verse is saying. Bhagavata kashtaparashri bhagavata. This proves the highest summit, the highest reach of his Bhagavatva, of his being Bhagavan. Something also interesting that again is very counterintuitive for usual normal thinking, this paranormal thinking, the paradox that he brings is what makes God, truly divine, is not his self-satisfaction. Atmaram, Swaramata, which is certainly we have that idea, God is perfectly self-satisfied. Say no. What makes him truly God is his willingness to abandon his self-satisfaction in the pursuit of the holy discontent created by love. Holy discontent. We talked about that also in Evolution, Divine Love. Love creates an ongoing thirst for more. It's not a bad discontent. That's why I say holy. No. There's always an openness for more, more love, more depth, more interaction. So there's no self-satisfaction. At least not the God we worship. No? Shishirada Krishna, Gorga Dadar. That's the realm of divine dissatisfaction. Narayan Vaikuntha is more like God. Like, cool. No? Self-satisfied. Maximum, he may need some foot massage, and Lakshmi is there. Not criticizing God, of course, but just saying. I mean, you don't hear Lakshmi Devi doing much more service than that. Not to downplay that. I mean, that's perfect. That's the need of the moment. That's the mood of the Leela. That's glorious. That's eternal. But that's not the realm of utter necessity created by love. That's somewhere else in the same place and in a chamber of that realm. So to say, very secret one, Raja Guhyam. Again, these are very counterintuitive ideas. We may not think like that because we may got accustomed to that, to hear the things, and we not really, do not realize how esoteric, deep, confidential the things are. So we may have this double problem. We take the things for granted, but at the same time, we have unconsciously inherited many patterns and beliefs about God that are utterly dysfunctional and contradictory to the things that we've taken for granted. That put those things. Things together, and you have religious PTSD in many ways. So we need to do the work, no? Okay, this inherit distorted religious cultural DNA, whatever it from wherever it came from, family, home, society, waiting for the shower in the ashram, Krishna's testing you. No. Gaur Hari Bol to all of that. Gaur Hari Bol. And then seeing what we have received in the tradition for what it is, for the wonder that it is. Not again to develop any superiority complex or anything, but even by objective comparison, this is pretty high and confidential tip. So we have to be humbled and say, wow, such a gift. It's okay. Sanatha Goswami is saying here, God's main defining feature is not self-satisfied, is that he's willing to throw self-satisfaction out of the window to run after the perpetual thirst created by love and remain in that state forever. That's the ultimate limit of his godhood. When you play out godhood, that's what it takes. It takes you to a place where you reach a point that God becomes so much God, so to say. These are words, right? That when you play out the ultimate limit of godhood, the paradox is that God starts to lose sight that he's God in the absorption of love. So, in summary, before unpacking, no? Here Sanatana Goswami is saying Krishna can set aside his main self, his most famous, the known God is most famously known as self-satisfied. He's willing to set aside that, which again could be the most defining attribute of God. He's setting aside that, which implies, again, embrace becoming supremely dissatisfied in divine love to the point of losing sight of his own godhood, because that's Krishna in Vrindavan. He forgot his God. Everyone forgot his God. Because they are doing something more important than reminding the God and themselves that he's God. So he can leave all his qualities, this verse says. He's willing, he's capable of throwing out of the window not only self-satisfaction, he says swaramata adi. So adi means etc. So it means swaramata is kind of a quality that one of the most defining qualities of God, self-satisfaction. And adi means etc., which means all the other qualities that also are the most defining qualities for most people about God. Krishna throws all of them out of the window, but he cannot leave one quality. And that's the focus on this verse. There's one quality that when he has thrown everything else, Sarva Upadhi Vinirmuktam, he's getting freed of all false designations. Like we are told, Sarva Upadhi Vinirmuktam, Anya Vilasita Shunyam, Jnana Karmadina. Get free from all this. All designations and stuff, masks and filters. Krishna's like, okay, self-satisfaction out of the window, all this, all that, supreme controller, cosmic administrator. I mean, he remains doing all that, but in one sense, it's a way of putting it. But at the end of the day, when you have like thrown out everything, there's one irreducible quality that makes the core of his being that he cannot do away with, because that's the very core of who he is, which is I'm controlled by the love of my devotees. That's his lay final irreducible sense of identity. And that's he, therefore, many acharyas say that's Krishna's most favorite quality about himself. Because that's what touches the core of the marrow of his being. All the other things are more peripheral. Peripheral. Yeah, that's there somewhere. Creator, this, that, but slave of my slaves, servant of my servants, lover of my lovers. Ooh, you have touched something there. That's my marrow. That's who I am. Everything else can be disposed of. This one, no, I won't let go of that, because if I let go of that, I'm no longer, I'm who I am. So if you will be interviewing Krishna and asking him, what's the most favorite thing about yourself? Which may sound like a narcissistic question in itself, right? But he will reply in a way that is absolutely humble, which is, my favorite quality about myself is that I become conquered by the love of my lovers. So it's not about him in one sense. Not about like, he could say, my most favorite thing is like, I'm the sustainer of all universes, you know? I mean, he has pretty good excuses to be proud. Right. Oh, I keep all this working and I do this and that and omnipresent and omniscient. That's not interesting, as interesting for him. So his supreme humility and in his supreme gratitude, he will say, this the favorite thing about me is that I'm conquered by the love of my devotees. So it's all about the love he's received. That's not at all about him. So that's very interesting. And that's a big, also deep humbling lesson for us, not to compare ourselves to Krishna, of course, but many times when we define ourselves, we many times define ourselves through the qualities that, I don't know, like protect our autonomy at all costs. No? My strength, my intelligence, my achievements, my independence, my control, my capacity to. Generally, we don't reply like Krishna will reply. Oh. Like Krishna is defining himself most deeply through his willingness to belong to another. That's basically how he replies. My favorite quality is my willingness to belong to another, and all that happens by that, the byproducts, the consequences of that. That's a favorite thing. The other things are like boring. So that puts in context the priorities in life and what's the real value and what's anartha, false value, that we are investing too much time and energy in something that is not the real thing, the real treasure, the real value. Like Prabhupada will say, we are all day wanting to become all powerful and all controlling, and the one who is all those things, he's not interested in that. No. The highest proof of that is Krishna's appearance, Mahaprabhu. It's God trying to be a devotee, and we are devotees trying to be God, and trying to have everything revolving around us in perfect control and everything like, as I want. The moment the chair is slightly on the other side, I'm starting to have a panic attack, and it's like, come on, are you so fearful of allowing things to move and to flow? You want to be God. God doesn't. God is not interested in being God. The more God becomes God, the more he forgets he's God. And the more he explores the limits of what it means to be God, he uses all that power and capacity to love and to be loved. And that creates a byproduct of forgetting his godhood. That's the paradox of love. So, again, this willingness or capacity to be conquered by love is not only his Krishna's favorite quality about himself, but it's his most defining attribute. Again, very important. Bhagavatva Simma. Bhagavatva, as I say, is in connection to being Bhagavan. And Simma means like the highest summit, the ultimate peak. No? So the ultimate peak is of his godhood, is to be loved to such point that makes him forget his godhood. That's very interesting, very humbling again. Because we may think, oh, if I will be God, no, my favorite thing about me will be that I can manipulate or influence or have this exercise. But he won't say that. The one who actually is, the only one who actually is, the favorite thing about me is closer to what could be the favorite thing about yourself. We are closer than what we think from God. That's my point. He said, the favorite thing about me is that I'm controlled by love, Krishna said. So why don't you say the same? Well, why don't we say the same? Advancing in life means getting closer to that same answer that Krishna himself will give in an interview. Favorite thing about myself is how love can conquer me. That's God's reply. I'm becoming God-like, not becoming God. In order to relate to God, the scriptures say you have to become like God. And I would say, like God means this. For God, the favorite quality is to be conquered by love. To become God-like means my favorite quality becomes that same thing. I'm conquered by love. I love to be conquered by love, which has a price, of course. It sounds romantic, but there implies lots of openness, vulnerability, trust, surrender. We are training the muscles over here. So also there's this expression, the ultimate limit of his godhood. No? And of course, by limit, we are not saying the ultimate limit, the ultimate point beyond which God cannot go. But more like the point at which divine ma majesty turns into divine intimacy. No? That's the ultimate limit. No? Where God crosses that threshold of divine majesty, you know, gets rid of all the majestic things, gets rid of the awareness that I'm God and enters intimacy and becomes fully conquered by that. Some aspect of him remains in the majestic department, the presidential house, as a cosmic administrator, but he crosses that the ultimate limit and enters into the realm of intimacy, to enter into self-forgetfulness in divine love. And that's very much in line with this line from the Bhagavatam that we quoted the other day, which is beautiful. Going back to Bhagavan, we are talking about Bhagavan. And many times we think, oh, Bhagavan is the one with the six opulences, six Aishwaryas, supreme strength, supreme renunciation, supreme knowledge, supreme fame, supreme this, supreme that. Yes, to some degree. That's Bhagavan. We will say, yeah, I mean, there are many ways to explain that. But Bhagavatam, when Sukadeva Goswami speaks about Bhagavan, say Bhagavan Bhakta Bhaktimam. Bhagavan Bhakta Bhaktimam means Bhagavan is the Bhakta of his Bhaktas. Bhagavan is the devotee of his devotee. Bhagavan is the lover of his lover. Bhagavan is the servant of his servants. However you like to frame that line. That's Bhagavan, he's saying. He's not saying Bhagavan is the cosmic administrator with all power, all strength. Yeah, all that's there. But that's not the ultimate face of Bhagavan. The ultimate face of Bhagavan that we are seeing here is Bhagavan Bhakta Bhakti Mam. He becomes the lover of his lovers. He becomes conquered by them. That's Bhagavan. That's Krishna's true Bhagavan. So yeah. There are different Bhagavans. No? You have Bhagavan in Vaikuntha, Bhagavan in Mathura, Bhagavan in Dwarka, Bhagavan here, Bhagavan there, Bhagavan everywhere. It's everywhere. But we are interested in a particular Bhagavatva, and in particular Bhagavanness, in a particular way in which Bhagavan is Bhagavan, which is paradoxically in a way that he forgets that he's Bhagavan. That's Bhagavatva Simha, again, the highest summit of Bhagavatva, Bhagavanness. Bhagavan becomes Bhakta Bhaktimam. I'm the devotee of my devotees. I'm a devotee. I'm also a devotee. Again, we're trying to be devotee. God is already a devotee. Everyone is. We are trying to be devotee of God. God is already devotee of everyone. So, yeah, God is great, but God is not too great, so to say. To become grateful. He still remains grateful, as great as he is. God is not too great to become humble. No? The fact that one is God is no, I don't have any chance to be humble because I'm God. I'm so big. No. No, God is not too great to become a servant. Again, that's very confidential. You generally don't hear in spiritual circles how God is a servant. Now, we are to become servants, which is an important part of the equation. But also, it's important to say, but why am I to become servant of that guy? Well, because he's already your servant. So we are just asked to participate in reciprocity. He's already serving everyone. And when you become his servant, he becomes even more your servant. Yeah. Gopi Bhartu Pada Kamala, your Dasa Dasa. And that's what Mahaprabhu said. One of the only verses that we know composed by Mahaprabhu, apart from the Sikshasagan. He say nam pro na chanara patin na ti vaishyana sudru nam banni na chagriha patin na vanastu yutin kintu pro dhyam paramanandan kintu pro dhyam nikila paramananda purna amrita bdher gopi vartu pada kamala yordas das. This Bhuta Shuddhi, this is a way of purifying our sense of identity. In the beginning of the day, one can recite this mantra. Mahaprabhu saying, I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a Vaisya, I'm not a Sudra, I'm not Sannyasi, I'm not Vanaprastha, I'm not Grihastha, I'm not Brahmin. I do not identify with any of that stuff. Though he is a Brahmin, though he is a Sannyasi, he's operating in society accordingly. But it's still, he's saying, that's on a relative level. Substantially, I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of Sri Krishna, the beloved of the gopis. The one who is conquered by his devotees, in other words. I'm the servant of one who is serving, one who is serving that. And that's God speaking. Again, that's Mahaprabhu. See, I'm the servant of the servant of the servant. So again, God is not too great to become a servant. God is not too great to become humble. God is not too great to become grateful. God is not too great. In fact, it is because he is all the things that he's got. No, he's grateful, he's humble, he's servant. You are God. You are giving proper example. You're walking your talk. But you ultimately, God is someone who longs for love. Now, there's one beautiful line from Simple Life. Some of the things I'm included also in my forthcoming book, in the last chapter of the book, because again, the whole book is how God loves us, then how we should learn to love ourselves based on that, what gets in the way of that, and then how to return the embrace, how to love God back, how to love others back. And the last chapter is how God loves us back after we have loved him back. And so, a lot to say about that. There's one line from Henry Nouwen, Christian author, mystic. He will say, "The unfathomable mystery of God is that God is a lover who wants to be loved." So again, I'm sure other traditions just also for us not to feel too much of a superiority complex. Right? Only us say the things. So we say that in our own way. And we like that way, and here that's why we are here. It's not that it's absolutely foreign to any other people. So he will say, "The unfathomable mystery, Raja Gaguhyam, the king of all secrets, the unfathomable mystery of God." God is mysterious in itself. You can call God the mystery in itself. But what's the mystery of the mystery, the unfathomable one? Is that he's a lover who wants to be loved. No? He's a lover means he's loving already. He wants to be loved. He's longing. Not he wants, like, I want to be loved, but he longs for that, for each heart. This is interesting because we may already have some difficulty in accepting that God loves us. But it may be even more difficult to conceive that God lo longs to receive our love. So we have to work on that because this verse is confirming that he does. So it's sometimes difficult for us. Okay, God loves me. I'm not so sure. No. And he's longing to receive my love back? Definitely not. Not only I'm not so sure, I'm certain that's not the case. Because why we may feel too small, too whatever, too inconsistent, too wounded to give anything back to value to the infinite. But this verse declares otherwise. And this therefore is another empowering assurance for your self-acceptance, for acknowledging who you are as a soul, a Charyabhat, wonderful soul with wonderful potential in bhakti if you dare to take shelter under that divine energy. It's not only about you, but it's about you doing certain things, connection to bhakti, and yeah. You're being longed for. If you still do not believe me, then that's your homework. So again, the divine is not just wanting our obedience, not like sometimes God is portrayed, obey me. Or he doesn't want you just to believe in things. No, he doesn't want even you to be a perfect, moral, civilized human being. No, not that any of those things are bad, but he desires ultimately that particular love that only your heart can provide to him. That no one else can offer precisely in the same way. There's a unique flavor in the individuality of each soul, and Krishna is longing to relish that part of the menu. To interact again, it's not some relish, selfish relish. We are talking about love, so it's never self-centered, never exploited. So he longs for that radical personalism, entering into each one's heart. Like the Bhagavatam gives these beautiful, like, verses where one of the many names, Krishna has many names with animals. Like he's a swan taking the essence, he's like an intoxicated elephant. Well, like walking, like when Jagannath is taken out of the temple for Rath Yatra, he's like, ooh. And that entails literally how he's impacted by the love of his devotees. So he's drunk. is intoxicated. One name for Krishna, for God in the Vishnu Sahasranam, is Dripta. No, he's intoxicated, the intoxicated, or the drunk one. One name, many of he has many names with Madhu also, which means like honeybee or like bumblebee. And Bhagavatam makes many verses, but he enters into the lotus heart of the devotee, no? Like a bumblebee. And then Krishna starts to drink, take the pollen of that heart and becomes intoxicated, no? Like tipsy-turvy. He enters the tavern of the heart of the devotee and starts to get so intoxicated, like you, when you see a bumblebee drinking from the And poetically speaking, they just say that then at night the lotus closes and the bumblebee was so intoxicated and never left the lotus. So became trapped there forever. So that's how God becomes trapped in the heart of the devotee's love. And vice versa, of course. The devotee is another bumblebee, enter the lotus heart of Krishna, intoxicated. So each one trapped by love. Let me read a little excerpt for Irreversible Grace, my forthcoming book in this connection. And I quote this verse also there in one part. When the soul awakened by divine grace loves God for love's sake, the sweet absolute is undone. He who once waited patiently for our yes becomes forgetful of his own godhood, intoxicated by the affection of his devotee. This is the sublime symmetry of spiritual life. The infinite, having poured himself out in mercy, now feels that he has received something immeasurably greater, our love. So again, God starts to behave toward us, toward the devotee, and as a devotee, again, as a devotee of the devotee. I'm always reminded of this beautiful exchange between Sri Gauranga Dev and Sanatana Goswami, the author of this book. So he had personalized first-hand experience with Bhagavan to then write things like this. Because at one point, as you may remember, Sanatana Goswami received this, how to say, source in his body. It was so the source were oozing with different substances. And Mahaprabhu will go embrace Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami was, please don't touch me. He was feeling so bad about that. I'm like, I'm so polluted. I'm with all this stuff, and you're coming. You see me, and you run and embrace me. Why you're doing that? Sanatana Goswami was really like, why you are doing that? Are you like playing a trick on me? You want to trigger me? You want to traumatize me more than what I am so far, so to say. I'm a person. I'm touching you to purify myself. That was Mahaprabhu, God's reply. I'm touching your body, which externally will have been considered totally impure because of the source. Mahaprabhu says, I'm touching that body to purify myself. And then Mahaprabhu tells him, continues to further explain. He says to Sanatana Goswami, seeing you is the perfection of my eyes. Touching your feet is the perfection of my touch. Glorifying your qualities is the true activity of my tongue. Again, this is God praising his devotee, not the other way around. Right? Which, of course, we sometimes may pray in that same way, but now we have the reversal. So at that moment, at that moment, it's impossible to say who is God and who is the devotee, because both are devotees, devoted to the. It's interesting how love makes the usual language of superiority, inferiority, it makes it inadequate. No longer works. We need another language altogether. And this exchange between Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami, again, I'm based on that, Sanatana Goswami is revealing things like this now. So these exchanges challenge the assumption of like that spiritual hierarchy or like divine graces moves only in one direction, right? Okay, we praise for God's grace, but God prays for the devotee's grace. So it's two-way street. Generally, we'll think it's just one-way street. Grace comes from one source, the giver and then to the receiver. But this reverts this these dynamics. Chaitanya Charitamrita, in this connection, says that divine love has this unique effect. Again, it's all what we are doing here, studying love. Divine love has this unique effect, says it imbues seniors, equals, and juniors with the spirit of sacred dedication. In one sense, all those hierarchies dissolve, and everyone becomes a servant of the same cause, God included. The senior of the seniors, so to say. No, he becomes a junior, he becomes a servant. No. In other words, love awakens service in every direction. It's not like, no, I'm senior. The juniors do the service. Oh, I'm peer or whatever. That's the unique effect of divine love. It's imbuing this spirit of sacred dedication towards juniors, seniors, equals, all of them. Everything belongs. And again, God is not an exception to this verse, to this rule. And that gives a very interesting criterion for spiritual maturity, for seeing where we are on yardstick. Like, does my position makes us expect more service or demand more service to us, or does make it more eager to serve? Because again, the presence of divine love warrants everyone is willing to give themselves. And God is leading the way. So if God is so willing and so happy doing that, why I'm not, if that's the case? Just one little thing. So yeah, Krishna is a fanatical lover of his devotees. There's one line in the Bhagavatam in the 11th canto, he says, Mad Bhakta Puja Biyadika. That's a very nice line. He said, the worship of my devotees is higher than my worship. That's interesting, huh? Because here comes a person whom everyone is worshiping. Say, yeah, you got it wrong. It was not about me. I have my own altar. I'm worshiping someone else. And Srila Prabhupada will say that most religions teach God is the all worshipable object, but many do not know that he has a worshipable object of its own. He has his own altar. He's in everyone's altar. He has his own altar. Mad Bhakta Puja Vyadika. The worship, the adoration of my devotees is superior to my worship. In my opinion, Krishna is saying, in my opinion, you see. You see what you concluded. In my opinion, for me personally, that's the highest worship. That's the famous verse that Shiva speaks to Parvati, right? Aradhananam sarvesham Vishnu Aradhanam param tasmat parataram devi taitiyanam samarchanam. Of all the types of worship, the worship of Vishnu is the highest. So Parvati is like, oops, I'm worshiping Shiva. I'm in the wrong camp. You say tasmat parataram devi, but however, higher than even higher than that is the worship of those who are beloved by Vishnu. Oh, so Parvati said, like, I'm in. Shiva is Vaishnavanam
jatasam.
So here we have no Krishna emphasizing, insisting. His devotees, my lovers, are to be honored more than myself. That's why in our tradition we have this idea of Vaishnav Seva also. And also that's a way that prevents devotion just from escaping into private transcendence. I'm just worshiping God. I don't have anything to do with all these guys over here. But Krishna's worshiping all these guys over here. Right, so how we treat God, as we were talking yesterday, right? How we treat God becomes reflected in how we treat everyone else, you know? Becomes inseparable. How we worship God, how we worship His devotees, and how we worship everyone by extension, because in potential, everyone is devotees. And God sees us according to our brightest potential. So in his eyes, everyone is already a devotee. So we should treat everyone accordingly. Few more ideas. Don't forget we are here, right? It's all this verse. Like Pariprajñāna. We are exploring the verse from circumambulating from different angles and directions. Jiva Goswami says in his Spritisandarbha, many things he says. That's his longest Sandarbha, but there are many beautiful things. And it's a his treatise about priti, about prem. Priti is a love word for divine love. Say this sweet absolute, I mean, says Krishna, I say the sweet absolute, lives not only for his own pleasure. Again, Atmaram means that. Atmaram means to he who derives Ram, pleasure from his own Atma, self-satisfied. So the sweet absolute does not live only for his own pleasure, but only for the happiness of his devotees. So, and again, in us, there may be some trigger like you live only for the happiness of someone else. That's codependency. Right? Oh, that's unhealthy self-erasure. No? And we are not promoting that. But we are saying God is doing that. So again, in divine love, and that's why we may need to take time to understand the proper way of doing that. But in divine love, self-giving and personal fulfillment are not competitors. Because again, there's no more separate agenda. There's no, okay, now it's my time for self-giving, and there's my time for what I want for me. Gradually in sadhana, we realize the highest possible self-interest is actually in dedicating myself to love. But we still do not believe that because lifetimes of thinking otherwise, it's a gradual alignment of that point. It's about to say, Jayatma Suprasidati. When you engage in bhakti, relentless bhakti, uncontainable bhakti, jayatma supersiddhi, your soul attains complete fulfillment. So your best personal interest lies in self-forgetfulness in divine love. But in the beginning, it doesn't make sense to our head. So still we think, yeah, I'm a devotee, but I also need to secure this stuff for me. And it's like still you have this idea for me as an island, and that's the cause of your headache, of your trouble. So gradually we awake to this reality. Oh, giving myself in service and fulfillment are not competitors. And therefore Krishna is leading the way with that. Krishna discovers his own deepest happiness precisely in the happiness of his devotee. And again, he has He's God. Again, he could be Atmaram. He could say, I can't derive happiness from my own self. I'm fine. Can sit self-satisfied. There's that side of the divine. That's not the main one for it, but that is completely self-satisfied. But on top of that, he's deriving a greater happiness in the exchange of hearts. So that's a lesson for us. That's how why Krishna says that's another beautiful. That's not Krishna actually. Well, that's Krishna. It's Vishnu, no? Bhagavan Narayan from Vaikuntha in the Bhagavata in the ninth canto in these beautiful six prayers that begin with Aham Bhakta Paradino. He has Satan Trivadvija. He's telling to Durvasa Muni. Remember the story? Durvasa Muni wants to kill Ambarish Maharaj, and he's the Sudarshan Chakra is like burning his tail. All over the world, and eventually he comes to Bhagavan Vishnu to beg forgiveness. He's like, I cannot do anything. No? You've messed up with my devotee. You have to. I'm dependent on them. You come to me like if I'm like their boss. I'm their slave. That's how he starts to speak. Like Aham Bhakta Paradino, he has Satan Trivada. I'm the devotee of my devotee. Have not the least independence. Durvasa is like, what? What's going on here? There are six verses. That's another retreat we could do. We did that study in the past. It's recorded. Beautiful six verses.
I will read those six verses. Let's see. I have to find them. Oh, sorry. I'll read them directly in English, of course, just not to make it so long. But these are beautiful verses. Okay, come on. Okay, I'm getting into trouble here. One, three. Okay, there we go. I'll read them straight. Again, this Bhagavan Narayan Vaikuntha, what we say is relatively self-satisfied. He loved his devotees, but it's not to the extreme degree of madness that we all find in Krishna Vrindavan Mahaprabhu. So you just take this and multiply that accordingly to the intensity of Vrindavan. I am completely under the control of my devotees, as if I had no independence at all. My heart is entirely seized by those devotees who are establishing authentic being, since I myself am the lover of my devotees. Without such saintly souls who seek out nothing but me, I have no desire to enjoy my own bliss, Atmaram, not even my supreme opulence. What joy is there for me apart from them? My devotees abandon home, wealth, even their very lives, only to serve me, expecting nothing in return. How then could I ever abandon them? Just as a chaste woman brings her gentle husband under her control through her devoted service, so do my devotees, equal to all and fully attached to me in the core of their hearts, bring me entirely under their sway. They do not seek even the four types of liberation, though such rewards come out of their own accord. What to speak then of perishable pleasures like heavenly enjoyment? Now comes the last verse, that is the one that I want to share with you. Sada Bhuhridayam Mayam Sadunam Hridayantuham. Krishna is saying, my devotees are my very heart, and I am their very heart. They know nothing other than me, and I know nothing other than them.
Wow.
No. So that's verse number chapter nine, canto nine. Chapter 4, verses 63 to 68. Yeah, those are beautiful verses to learn by heart or recite on daily basis or whatever. That's beautiful meditation. So again, this whole series concludes with that line, what Bhavan said, my devotees are my heart, I'm their heart. They know nothing apart from me, I know nothing apart from them. Tadatmya. Like melting, merging of hearts. So before we conclude, going back to the verse, I mean, we never left it. We just started to do parikram. We did parikram. We never started. I'd like to read one more section from my forthcoming book in this regard. It says, to be mastered by love, it's not to lose. To be mastered by love is not to lose power. Because again, the idea of being mastered by means losing something. It is to reveal its highest form. We often imagine that what most defines God is his sovereignty, his ability to remain untouched, independent, unbounded by anything or anyone. But here, the tradition speaks a different word, or this verse. The defining limits of God's godhood is not how free he is from all influence, but how freely he gives himself to be influenced by love. Finding limit of God is not how free he is from all influence, nothing touches me, but how freely he gives himself to be influenced by love. The ultimate expression of divinity is not the refusal to be controlled, but the willingness to be ruled gently, joyfully, by the affection of his lovers. As we said the other day, Susukam, Kartum, Abhyam, Bhakti is joyful for us and for Krishna. He loves to do bhakti. He loves to be a bhakta of his bhakta. In such surrender, the infinite finds its sweetest meaning. No? We worship a sweet infinite. Again, a sweet absolute. And it's funny, again, going back to us, we have to reflect back on our situation. And many times, us human beings often protect ourselves from being touched, from being influenced, from love, because being affected feels like losing control. Like, what's this psychologist's name? Carl Rogers. He will say a quote in Radical Personalism about listening, because listening, as Paul Tillich will say, the first duty of love is to listen. And Carl Rogers will say, but we are terrified about listening. Because when you truly listen, you are transformed by listening, by the one you are listening to. And most of us are terrified about change. We want to be changed. And love is all about that. So many times we paradoxically, love is the thing we need the most, and love is the thing we are most terrified about. Because it's what transforms us completely. So again, God is leading the way for us to gradually get some, I'll say in English, muster some courage to, okay, no? In one sense, this verse is saying very clear, invulnerability is not the highest form of strength, right? I'm invulnerable, nothing touches me, nothing influences me. I'm God. That's not God. And that's not supposed to be us. We're not God. No? God could have some reasons to say, I'm invulnerable, I'm beyond anything, but I want to be vulnerable, and I am. So what to speak to us who are not God? So the capacity to be moved without being destroyed, because we are afraid of being destroyed and being moved or being open, that points to a deeper power. Well, that's the deeper power. It's not so much in not being touched, in not being changed, but in being touched and moved without being destroyed, without being abused, without being diminished, of course. So love is not so much, I mean, asking us to merely give, but it's asking us to become, how to say in English? Permeable?
Permeable.
Permeable. Permeable. Porous. Sorry, I'm practicing my English. To allow the reality of the other to modify my plans, my ideas, my feelings, my priorities, my own understanding of myself. That's a huge one to release. How you see, how you look at yourself, how willing you are to release that aversion, that idea of yourself by contact with another. That's the price for love. You have to allow yourself to be permeable, permeated, porous, affected, influenced in a positive way. But that implies change, because the moment I am affected by input from an environment, a healthy one we are talking about here ideally, that starts to change many things. Our little, small, encaged life of plants and everything in the same color in the same place. Plans change, my priorities change, my self-image change, for better. So it shouldn't be scary. It should be scary to remain in the cage. No? Yes.
Is that the word sway that influences those ways?
Again, sorry?
The word you've got in gracefully sway.
Yeah.
I was wondering what that meant. Yeah,
I'm glad you asked. It was like a mysterious word, right?
Yeah.
Because you have the verb also in English to be swayed, right? That's like,
yes.
Or carry the carried also carried away by the way. So again, it's all in a positive way, but that's the influence of love. No? We open and you are no longer, you are never the same. That's what we need the most. But that's what we fear the most. That's the symptom of being a conditioned soul. We are terrified about love. Not to make anyone feel bad. Again, we are not playing any guilt game, but we need to also be responsible for where we choose to stand and hopefully feel called to. So again, Krishna not only Of course, not only is affected by love, as we say it briefly, because I think it's an important one, that he allows himself to be shaped by love. No? That's another way of speaking about the same thing. No, he's crafted, carved by the love of his devotees. No? If we want to become a little poetic, Gortran Pro will understand this. He's a craftsman, carpenter. No? So our tradition reveals that a god that takes a particular form, not to assert dominance, but to deepen intimacy. According to the unique flavor of love in one's heart, Bhagavana takes a unique carved form. Irrepeatable. It's not that there's only one Bhagavan, Bhagavan Narayan, there's not only one Bhagavan Krishna. Okay, there's Bhagavan Krishna, Mathura, Dwarka, Vrindavan. Oh, okay, in Vrindavan, there's Bhagavan Sri Krishna for Madhurya, Rasa, for Sakya. No, there is a Bhagavan Sri Krishna and a Sri Radha and a Sriman Mahaprabhu and a Gorga. Unique version of them for reciprocation to each one of us. A unique form that is not exactly the same as it that takes that particular shape. Because again, Bhagavatam says many times, Bhagavan assumes transcendental forms to fulfill the desires of his devotees. There are many verses saying that. So he assumes different form to fulfill, is in service to his devotee. No. It's in response to their love. And their love creates a particular shape. Even in this world, we have that. If you meet someone you love, you gain a whole halo. And your color changes. And if you're terrified to death, you'll take a different shape. To some degree, you can do that. What to speak if your whole form and body is spiritual? It's made of love, it's made of emotions. That will be like, So, as I like to say, God is a byproduct of love. No. No. There's a particular love, and that makes God take a particular shape as a byproduct, as a consequence. And of course, this doesn't mean that, just to be clear, that God's essential nature is unstable, so to say. And we need to be concerned about that. I have enough with my own instability, or that devotees are manipulating God, like to take one shape and the other. And like, it's not the point. So that God's unchanging nature is relational. And God is unchanging because God is love. That doesn't change, it's unchanging. But that unchangingness is relational. And that relationality creates newer and newer waves and expression. So he eternally possesses, no, that's unchanging. He eternally possesses the freedom and desire to respond uniquely to each heart, to each form of love. So that's unchanging. And there are different ways in it in our tradition that's been depicted. And one nice way to make the point clear, and that's very interesting, to how to which degree God is crafted and affected and carved out of love, you know, in the Rasa Lila, how love is leaving an imprint upon God's complexion. Because Krishna's complexion is known as Shyam, which is like sapphire color, so to say. And in the Rasa Lila, we have the circular dance of love, where Krishna is dancing the gopis with the gopis, and the gopis are generally the hue of the gopis is described more like golden, basically. No? And Krishna's hue in one verse of the Bhagavad and dancing with the gopis is described as emerald like. Which color is emerald?
Green.
How you get green by mixing which two colors? So that's another way of making that point, right? The Shamsun, the Sham color with the golden color get together. Oh, Krishna becomes imbued, or impacted by the golden heart of the gopis, and he becomes emerald-like. But intimacy leaves a color. Yeah, every genuine relationship leaves a trace. We are colored by love. That's another thing that comes to my mind. The Sanskrit word raga, rag, rag. That is also used in Indian classical music. That's the first time I learned that word when I studying tabla. And raga is a difficult word to translate. They will, if you go to a music teacher and say, what's raga? It's like, I can tell you what raga is not, but what's raga is complex. But literally, raga means that which colors the mind. But also, we use the word raga for passionate, loving attachment. So, in connection to what I just said, passionate, loving attachment colors the mind, colors Krishna's body. Oh, so beautiful connection. And in this connection, there's this verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, which says, as the servant is transformed by the qualities of the master or God, in this case, God is transformed by the qualities of the servant. So again, it's always mutual. It's not like, oh, Krishna is influencing me, affecting me. He's being affected as well. He's willing to be affected. Again, ordinary relationships, generally, we may want generally to influence the other person. That's how it works in this world. I want to influence you without being changed myself. Right? And unconsciously, sometimes we approach relationship from that place. I don't want to be influenced by you, but if there is a chance, I'll try to put my seed of influence over there. But we see here, divine reciprocity shows a very different picture, right? Real love allows transformation to move in both directions. And both parts are willing to participate in that. No? Again, in relationship in which one person is must change, that's not relationship. No. How you call that? Dictatorship? Right? So anyhow, this verse is ultimately inviting us to reconsider again who is God. No? So we can say how we think of God, even how we think of ourselves as aspire and bhaktas in connection to God, and what can we offer in the relationship. No? Again, is perfection the ability to remain untouched, or shall we redefine perfection? No, is real perfection the freedom to be? To be deeply affected without ceasing to be myself. Oh, we will say that's true perfection. The ability to be touched, affected without ceasing to be myself, without losing myself. As we talked before, impossibility. Oh, there's one example that I mentioned in my book regarding that. Again, for still in case you still hone this idea, okay, God is beyond everything, he's unaffected. And therefore, we follow in that example. Sometimes we really want to be unaffected. And that's the high good thing, to have an impossible God. So there is one example that I'm sharing from. Anyhow. Yeah, that was, I think, Pranagopika, your Gurudev's thesis, PhD thesis. He's speaking about impossibility. He was the example of different elements. Now, there's someone reciting English poetry, and there's a glass of water, there is a mosquito, there is a dog, there is a non-English speaker, there's an English speaker that is untouched by poetry, and there's an English speaker touched by poetry, sensitive to poetry. And someone is reciting English poetry. Huh? So the glass of water remains impassible. Huh? A mosquito may perceive some frequency. The dog may perceive a little bit more of more vibration and emotional content, a little bit. No? The non-English speaker will perceive much more, but still he doesn't speak English, so it's like he cannot fully capture what's going on. Then the one who speaks English gets even more, but it's one who is untouched by poetry. Unfortunate conditions. And then we have the one who speaks English and appreciates poetry. So that person will be even more enriched by the experience. But that's the person who is the most affected. So the example is, okay, if you say that God is impossible, untouched, then he's a glass of water. Is that the highest? Or is the one who is most profoundly transformed and affected? Right? So, as God is that, we also want to, again, become God-like in that sense, as we were talking today. So, just making full circle, as we say today, the sweet absolute is already loving us unconditionally. And And then when we dare to return the embrace and hopefully embrace and love him back, them back, equally unconditionally or unconditionally to some degree, then he will return the embrace again even more unconditionally. And what's that? What's that return? What's that reward? Again, we are not here for the reward, but still scriptures sing about that. Now, there's a nice, just to conclude, a nice line from the Bible that says, "Eye has not seen, ear has not heard what God has prepared for those who love him without counting the cost." We as God just may say, well, we will reply, at least a glimpse of that. Eye has not seen, ear has not heard, but a glimpse of that is given to us in verses such as the one we are studying today. How this with absolute returns this, the embrace to those who dare to love him, how he dares to love them. So anyhow, a few reflections that I want to share with you today. And actually, I want to share something more, but I won't because I will repress myself because that's another class of, because 2 years, a few years ago, not 2 years, more than 2 years ago, I wrote two articles called Beyond Atmaram. Some of you may have read them. They are in my website. You can put Beyond Atmaram. We can share them in our WhatsApp group today. Each one of them is 3 pages, so they're not so long. Starting with the Atmaram verse of the Bhagavatam, famous Atmaram verse, which is very connected to this, which speaks about leaving Atmaram aside. But in that case, it was Sukadev Goswami, right? Sukadev was Atmaram, self-satisfying. He left that to listen to the Bhagavatam. But that verse also can be read to apply Atmaram to Bhagavan, as we are talking today. And he's throwing his Atmaram from the window, out of the window, pursuing something else. So it's an exploration of that. It's too much for today. I don't want like to open. But I'm mentioning it. We are sharing the articles. And for those who are watching the lecture, if you would like to read them, it's my website. You put Beyond Atmaram, part one, part two. But it's a further reflection that it's not all about around this verse, but it almost concludes with this verse, which in one sense, this verse could also reading between the lines can point to Mahaprabhu as well. No, that Bhagavan is so much, he throws his self-satisfaction out of the window and is completely dissatisfied. Krishna trying to taste the heart of Radha. And again, as it says, no, he's controlled by his devotees. Okay, who is the highest devotee for Radha? And Krishna is so controlled by that. He's accepting that, welcoming that, on the highest limb. Anyhow, that's as much of a trailer as I can give from about this article. So we'll put the sharing to rest now, but we'll do one little exercise to try to incorporate, internalize, personalize what we share today and own it in our own journey. So I'll read the prompts as usual. Will be 3 prompts, 2 minutes each in groups of three. I will name the groups in a moment. So we'll try to make it again personalized. So prompt one is, where do you still protect yourself from love? By trying not to be affected. Where do you still protect yourself from love, trying not to be affected? Sorry, I'm throwing you into the fire right with prompt one. Safe space, I hope. The number second one is how does it affect you? How does it affect you to imagine that Krishna allows your love to change him? How does it affect you to imagine that Krishna allows your love to change him?
Yeah. It's heavy stuff. Sorry, guys. It's important. We are doing serious stuff, work here. And the third one, what becomes possible in your bhakti? What becomes possible in your bhakti when you trust that your particular love truly matters to Krishna? I like how Karuneshwari, after every prompt, is like, Thank you. Confirmation that the prompt will work. What becomes possible in your bhakti when you trust that your particular love truly matters to Krishna? Yeah. Okay. Now we'll put pause to the recording, mention the groups, and later also we'll be sharing the articles, and as well as today we have writing contemplation. We have been doing some Lectio Divina, contemplation of the verse during the from 4 to 6. And then some 30 minutes of group sharing again before the evening sharing circle. Lots of sharing today. Srimad Bhagavatam Brita Ki Jaya, Shrila Sanatan Goswami Ki Jaya, Gaur Premanand.